From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. While the opioid crisis continues to plague the Cape Fear region and the state, there are signs that recent initiatives are helping. Opioid overdose visits to the New Hanover Regional Medical Center Emergency Department dropped by more than half through 10 months of 2018. As NHRMC spokesman Julian March puts it, that's encouraging news for a community 2 years ago cited by a national study as home of the nation's worst opioid problem. March attributes the drop in part to a nearly 20% cut in prescriptions for opioids. District Attorney Ben David recently told the Star News he's also seeing a decrease in the number of heroin cases over the last year. More people are seeking treatment, partly due to an effort to funnel people struggling with addiction into treatment rather than jail. According to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, science supports the use of medications like methadone, naltrexone, and buprenorphine for opioid use disorder. But federal health officials also acknowledge some people do stop using on their own or through support groups. Tides, Inc. is a nonprofit funded by New Hanover County that treats pregnant women and new moms and women who may be planning to become pregnant who are dependent on opioids. All of its patients are on medically assisted therapies. A proposed treatment facility in New Hanover County called the Healing Place will offer men dependent on drugs and alcohol a support system through a long-term 12-step program. The project, however, is controversial. A City of Wilmington meeting on January 8th lasted over 7 hours, with council and members of the community questioning the security and the services of the planned facility, the Healing Place in New Hanover County. But the model it's based on shows a high rate of success. According to Trillium Health Resources, the program has a 70% recovery rate for people that complete the program. With us today to explore these options and emerging treatment options, Cindy Ellers is Executive Vice President of Clinical Operations for Trillium Health Resources. She is also a licensed professional counselor. Cindy Ellers, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
Dr. William Johnstone is a faculty physician in the Obstetrics and Gynecology Residency Program at New Hanover Regional Medical Center and is the founder of TIDES. Dr. Johnstone, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have an opioid dependency? What treatment plan do you follow? Has insurance covered it? You can call us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And just a note, if you'd like to be anonymous with your email, please put anonymous at the top of your email. Dr. Johnstone, tell us first about the research supporting medically assisted therapies and why you wanted to use MATS at TIDES.
We modeled the TIDES program after a program at UNC that's been in existence for 27 years. It began as a campaign promise of Governor Jim Hunt during one of his campaigns to make money available for treating crack babies, quote unquote. Of course, he was elected, and one of my colleagues at UNC applied for the grant. He got the grant and started Horizons at UNC to address that problem. Of course, time has moved on, the drug of choice has changed, and so their treatment of these women have changed, and they use medically assisted therapy exclusively because of the high success rate, as high as 96%. The research is there, especially in pregnancy, with the MOTHER study, M-O-T-H-E-R study, out of Johns Hopkins that came out in 2010, I think it was, supporting the safety of buprenorphine in pregnancy. So it's supported in pregnancy as well as long-term in substance abuse.
And so that kind of medication is safe for a pregnant woman to take? That's safe for a fetus?
Yes, it is. Yes.
According to Trillium Health Resources, your organization, Cindy Ellers, the program has a 66% recovery rate 1 year after beginning the program. And these statistics get very confusing. You and I spoke before the show, and you said there's actually a 70% success rate if somebody completes the program. And then the Healing Place in Kentucky cites a 75% rate. Help us understand all these numbers that seem to be moving around and how you arrive at them.
Right. So when we are looking at the model of the program, we're basing our information on the culture of North Carolina, the other resources that are available to support a person once they move on to sober living after they've completed the program. You have to look at what's available in a community. So the success rate is really about how many people are sober 1 year later. So they've gotten the tools necessary while at the Healing Place to maintain sobriety when they get back to life as usual, right? Back in the community, back with their friend groups, back outside the walls of the Healing Place, which is an incredibly supportive community.
And we're not talking right now about using medically assisted therapy in the Healing Place. We're talking about abstinence-based 12-step approaches. Is that right?
So the model that has been researched is a model that includes an abstinence model only. In fact, people who are in the program part, so there are three parts of the Healing Place, and I'm more happy than happy to talk about the three parts, but the program aspect is an abstinence model. Currently, people can't get into the program aspect of this if they are using the MAT treatment modalities that you mentioned, buprenorphine, Suboxone. Those are not allowable treatment methodologies, although naltrexone, I believe it is able to be used by the men that are in this program today, just not Suboxone or buprenorphine or methadone.
And given these hugely high success rates of people who use medically assisted therapy, why wouldn't Trillium consider incorporating that into part of its treatment program?
Well, we are, in fact, with regards to lots of treatment services. So this is just one of many solutions in the community. Trillium is an organization that funds, just to be clear about that, both Medicaid, uninsured, and underinsured populations in this community. We try to make sure that the door is always open to people who are seeking a treatment for addiction. And there is no one path that's the right path. There's no one solution to addiction. There's not one answer that works for every person. So what we're trying to do is offer every option for recovery so that a person can make a choice about what's going to be the best for them. For many people, and this has been proven for years with the Alcoholics Anonymous or AA community and Narcotics Anonymous or NA communities, that's an abstinence model. Lots of people are incredibly successful following that model of recovery. There are also lots of people very successful with MAT and other treatment options.
And I do want to read an email from Jim, who writes, "One of the best ways to recover from opiate addiction is to detox in a proper medical facility, stay drug-free from all mind-altering and mood-changing chemicals. Active participation in peer-supported programs such as Narcotics Anonymous work well for long-term recovery." He says, "What most people don't know is that recovery from any type of addiction is a lifelong process. You cannot judge the success of a program if an addict is able to stay clean for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, which I thought Dr. Johnstone was a key point here. Gathering data on success rates and recovery outcomes seems to be kind of a moving target. Does TIDES have to report to any government, to the county, for instance, on its success rates? And how do you track that?
Yes, we do have to report to the county, mainly demographic data. You know, if New Hanover County is funding our program, we want to touch a lot of lives in New Hanover County. It makes sense. So most of it's demographic data. The success rates I'm quoting are national data that comes out of the literature.
The literature about medically assisted therapies.
About addiction therapy, yes. So it does vary from place to place because not all programs are the same. They don't include all the treatment modalities and plans, and unless you're within a similar organization, even in Wilmington, they're different forms of therapy. And the reason why they're there is because humans are not all the same. They have different needs. They have different requirements. Their success rates are different because we all have personalities. We all have different bodies. So the needs can be met with the treatment programs that we have in this region because there's so many different ones out there.
And is this one of the reasons, Cindy Ehlers of Trillium Health, that people have had a hard time kind of getting a handle on what the program is, what the treatment program is at the Healing Place planned for New Hanover County?
Yeah, I think it is a different model. Certainly, there are no long-term residential models that are recovery-oriented, that are peer support models of treatment that follow the AANA model of abstinence that exists in this community like this one. In fact, in North Carolina, there are very few statewide. The Healing Transitions in Raleigh and TROSA in Durham are two examples, but there are very few that don't focus on other treatment modalities. This is a unique, low engagement threshold type of program. It really is targeting individuals who are disenfranchised from the typical treatment or traditional treatment pathways, where it does target folks who are homeless. It does target folks who just haven't had success rates in other treatment methods they've tried.
And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about what you have called some public shaming going on when some of the questions have arisen around the plans for the Healing Place. Sure. In the city of Wilmington. You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of treatment options for people struggling with opioid use disorder. Dr. William Johnstone of Tides, Inc. and Cindy Ehlers of Trillium Health are with us today. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment during this live Wednesday discussion, you can do that by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And if you'd like to be anonymous in your email, please put anonymous at the top of the body of your email. When we come back from this break, more from listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, it's a look at emerging treatment options in the region, both methods and facilities for people addicted to opioids. With us and answering your questions today, Dr. William Johnstone, OBGYN with New Hanover Regional Medical Center and the founder of Tides, Inc., a local nonprofit that treats women who are thinking about becoming pregnant, women who are pregnant, and women who have just given birth and who are addicted to opioids with medically assisted therapy. Also with us today, Cindy Ehlers. She's Executive Vice President of Clinical Operations for Trillium Health Resources, and she's a licensed professional counselor. Trillium is working to open a long-term abstinence-based treatment facility in Wilmington called the Healing Place of New Hanover County. If you'd like to ask your own question on this Wednesday, you can do that by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Cindy Ehlers, at that city council meeting earlier this month, when there was so much public input and it was a marathon meeting that went on for hours, you got questions about what exactly the treatment program was going to be. You got questions about security and potential crime in the area. People complained about having a huge population of people who are struggling with addiction to opioids next to a hospice facility that is a huge repository for opioids. There's a children's center nearby. You say this is tantamount to public shaming. Why do you say that?
Well, so first of all, what I'd like to say, Rachel, is that these people are in your community right now. They're walking the street. They're not allowed to go to your homeless shelters because they're maybe under the influence of drugs or alcohol. They need help. They have a disease because addiction is a disease for drugs or alcohol, opiates, all the diseases need to be treated. People need help to recover from diseases. You know, some of the questions that got asked at that meeting about what is the curriculum, you know, I think having grown up here in Eastern North Carolina, we would never ask the Zimmer Cancer Center what is the curriculum they use to treat cancer, because cancer, a disease that lots of people have, just like addiction, doesn't have the stigma that addiction does. And people with cancer or other illnesses, diabetes, high blood pressure, don't have the experience of being shamed by the public for having that. In other words, there's a lot of people who feel like people with addiction caused this problem to come on themselves. And in fact, that couldn't be further from the truth. And science shows that, right? The National Institutes of Health say that. Addiction is a disease. Somebody can start out, and a great example that's relatable for lots of folks is teenagers start out smoking cigarettes. You know, it's one or two with their friends behind the gym at school or in some parking lot somewhere. And before they know it, they can't put them down. And they're stealing them from their uncle or their dad or whoever, or they're shoplifting them in stores to smoke, right? Because nicotine is one of the most addictive drugs there is. And our society has turned a corner on smoking, right, on nicotine addiction. Our society is spending thousands and thousands of dollars yearly to help people stop smoking. It used to have that same kind of stigma, though. When folks would test positive for lung cancer, it was their fault because they had been a smoker.
Although I know that we have some listeners now who are listening to you, but they're thinking, people with cancer, though, I don't worry about breaking into my house or breaking into a nearby repository of opioids, right, to you know, get what they feel they need to survive.
Right. So the fact is, there have been attempts to break into those nearby repositories that are public record with law enforcement here in Wilmington already, and there's not a facility next door. In fact, it's just trees on that 9-acre tract of land right now. But there have been attempts because that facility might not have the security it should have if it's a repository of those types of drugs, just as one example.
About children nearby? That was another one of the concerns that was raised.
So it's interesting. So let me talk a little bit, if you will, about the program, because I think there's lots of misconceptions out there. The program is really made up of three essential parts: a detox facility. The folks that are in that detox facility, there are 10 beds in this entire property. There'll be 10 beds for detox. And when people are in detox, they're in withdrawal. They're sick. They have the symptoms of the flu, worse than anyone could imagine symptoms of the flu. Vomiting, diarrhea, those sort of symptoms, they're not going to be up and about doing anything to anybody. Hopefully what's happening is they're getting the care and the support that they need in that detox setting to overcome the withdrawal and start on their route to recovery. The emergency shelter that is also there for people who are homeless and or folks who have maybe under the influence of alcohol or drugs. So currently in the city of Wilmington, there is no wet shelter. That's what it's referred to as a shelter that will accommodate homeless individuals under the influence of drugs or alcohol is known as a wet shelter because they're under the influence or wet.
And so this is a place where people who are not clean and or sober can come and sleep.
That's
for
right.
The night.
They come and sleep for the night. They come from all over the community. The largest referral source we'll have for that will be our faith-based communities. If you think of the Bethany Presbyterian Church out on Castle Hayne, runs a daily soup kitchen. They're likely to have lots of folks come there that may be under the influence. They can call and make a referral, and then we can pick that person up there at Bethany at 4 o'clock and bring them to the shelter. So when you think of how cold it was last night or how cold it will be tonight, the shelters in your community don't accept people who are under the influence of drug or alcohol.
Do we know where these people are going?
They're in the street. They're in the street. They're sleeping tonight in a doorway somewhere or a dumpster or behind one, or in a homeless camp. There are plenty of homeless camps all throughout New Hanover County and the city of Wilmington especially that exist today. That's where they are today. They're here now. This is not new. What we're trying to offer is a shelter for them so they're not on the street, so they're not in any way causing disturbances in the community, that they are safe and that the community is safe.
So there will be this detox facility. There will be a wet shelter.
Right.
Which will be active just at night.
Just at night.
And then there will be a treatment.
A program. And so the 75 to 80 beds that are program beds all of the people in those beds are in recovery. They are not actively using. They're not under the influence of drugs or alcohol. They are in active recovery. In an abstinence model today, that is the model that this program purports. In that program that they will be in, what we are referring to as the program, individuals will be working to learn about their disease, about the triggers, about what made them get to this point, and about how to get to a new place, how to find their way back, how to be productive members of society, how to be accountable to their neighbors, and how to be back with their families, you know, so that their kids aren't growing up in foster care, to work and pay taxes. This program has incredible success rates for helping men get back to that. And this particular program will be for men only. So it's about helping them find their way back. But it's not 100 beds of people who are actively using. It's only the wet shelter beds and the detox beds. And really, we're talking about 11 people who may be under the influence at night sleeping in this facility.
You're listening to Coastline. Treatment options for those battling opioid use disorder are growing in the Cape Fear region. With us today, Dr. William Johnstone, OBGYN with New Hanover Regional Medical Center. He's founder of TIDES, a local nonprofit that treats pregnant women and women who have recently given birth with medically assisted therapy. Cindy Eller is executive vice president of clinical operations for Trillium Health Resources. She's also a licensed professional counselor, and Trillium is seeking to open a treatment facility in Wilmington for men, as you just heard, using abstinence-based therapy or 12-step programs. You can ask your own question or weigh in on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. If you want to remain anonymous, make sure you say that at the top of your email. And I just want to get to Deirdre Parker's email. She is a pastor of a local church, and she is also a peer support specialist for Coastal Horizons. And she's saying, wonder if we could get a plug for our quick response team. When someone overdoses and is revived with Narcan, we are alerted, she says. We go out to meet the person and try to get them into services. We use the hashtag QRTOD. And I think that's just an important effort in this community. Absolutely. To acknowledge. Thanks for writing in, Deirdre. Also, David from Wilmington is from a new Google Tech startup called Opiade. They are creating a community data for physicians, he says. They're using a neural network to treat overdose. They wear a watch, he claims, that can even reverse an overdose. He says they've been on national news. And David, we will look forward to hearing more about that another time. Dr. William Johnstone, TIDES learned since the time that you've been here and on Coastline that it was getting fully funded by New Hanover County. Tell us about that.
Yeah, when I was here last, I was busting to try to tell the community that we were under consideration for funding, but we had to go through the county budget process, and I couldn't say officially that we were, and I had to really bite my tongue, but I did. I sent a cold email to the county commissioners because I've been knocking on a lot of doors trying to get funding for this program. Chairman Woody White must have been sitting at his computer when I sent the email out, because within 5 minutes he responded and asked that I meet with the county manager, the assistant county managers, a representative from Trillium, a representative from the hospital, and me to consider funding our program. And within a couple of months, last February, I found out that they were going to propose to fund us. So we sat down with Beth Schrader, who's at that point was the county budget director, and we came up with a dollar figure that we thought was appropriate. And, of course, then the budget had to sit on the table until June for public opinion. And I'm proud to say that the commissioners saw fit to fund us. It was a unanimous bipartisan vote to support us unanimously, and I'm very thankful. We received our funding in early September. And then, of course, we know what happened then. Florence hit. So we've kind of been, you know, scrambling at that time. But we're up and running, underway. We've got 14 to 16 patients currently, and have an executive director hired who is taking a lot off of me now, and I can tend to my paying job. But the response has been amazing. Again, I have to give a huge shout out to the New Hanover County government and their leadership.
What's your long-term vision for Tides in the community?
The long-term vision is to, well, our mission is to have healthy mothers having healthy babies, but also the main reason we do this is to keep the mother-baby dyad together. We all know that babies thrive when they are with their mothers and their mothers are healthy and they're in recovery. They do better feeling their mother's skin, hearing their mother's voice, breastfeeding, being raised by their mother in a safe environment. And so we know that there are times and situations that are appropriate for foster care, and God bless our foster parents. But if we can help intervene in a woman's life when she's given birth, to give her the tools and the success to be able to care for and raise her child successfully, that's what we're looking for.
So what is the rate of women patients who come into your facility with other children who are able to keep them? I mean, are some do some still need to be diverted to foster care?
Sure.
For the sake of those children?
Yes, they do. And that's left up to DSS, Department of Social Services and Child Placement Services. They do the investigations. They make recommendations. We obey those recommendations. But they're also seeing some benefit to having us as a partner. Have these patients supervised and observed in living situations, because we provide housing and they're supervised housing situations. And if they're comfortable that this baby can go home with her mom under our supervision, then we're willing to bring these women into our program, give them the skills. We teach parenting skills, life skills, job skills, training, so that these women can not only gain their recovery, but they can gain their independence by increasing their self-esteem and their confidence in themselves, by being able to go out into the community and get a job if they need to support their family, get their own home, get their own apartment, get them back on their feet so they can become a productive member of society again. So I guess long term, it's a tough goal to achieve, but I've already seen it happening. One of our first patients, unfortunately, she didn't benefit from all of the features of our program because it was before we were funded. But she has just made me a believer, because she's shed her addiction. She's in therapy. She is in training to become a certified counselor, and is living with her baby in a county close to here, but has told her story. She's willing to tell her story, and her story is remarkable when you sit down and listen to what she has to say.
You're listening to Coastline. We're looking at treatment options for those battling opioid use disorder in the Cape Fear region. Dr. William Johnstone is a faculty physician in the OBGYN residency program at New Hanover Regional Medical Center and a founder of Tides, Inc., a local nonprofit that treats women addicted to opioids who are pregnant, may become pregnant, or have recently given birth. And Cindy Ellers is Executive Vice President of Clinical Operations for Trillium Health Resources. She's also a licensed professional counselor. Trillium is seeking to open the Healing Place in New Hanover County. That is a men-only facility using abstinence-based therapy. You can ask your own question or weigh in on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. David from Wilmington called in and asked, how does Cindy coordinate the sharing of information, real-time data? There is a clarification. Opioid, he says, is a wearable technology and AI communication tool. Google has backed our technology. Have you heard about this, Cindy Ehlers?
Actually, I have not heard of this particular tech solution. There are lots of tech solutions out in the marketplace these days that are working to help either offer reminders, certainly through smartphone applications or Apple Watches or other media like that. People can be alerted to getting near to a place that has been marked by them as a not safe place for their recovery. It may be an old habit where they went, a bar, a location that they should stay away from, and their tech device can send them an email that say, or a text alert that says, don't go down that street because that place you used to hang out that supported your habit is not where you need to be, and remind them to leave that area. There are some great tech solutions that just send positive, affirmational text to people about how wonderful they are and how addiction is a disease and that they're not worthless or helpless and that they can overcome their addiction. So there are some great solutions out there. I haven't heard of this specific one, but I definitely know that there are lots of great solutions out there. We actually use one called the Chat at Trillium that is a avatar-led assessment modality. The CHAT stands for Child Health Assessment, for the Comprehensive Health Assessment for Teens by Inflexion. And it is a modality lots of our providers use where for teenagers who are much more able to interact with media, for them to talk to an avatar and tell the truth about their addiction.
Wow. You're listening to Coastline. We're taking a look at local efforts to treat people suffering from opioid use disorder in the Cape Fear region. Cindy Ehlers of Trillium Health and William Johnstone of Tides, Inc. are answering your questions. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org with your own question. If you'd like to be anonymous, please put that at the top of your email. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're looking at emerging therapies and facilities for opioid use disorder, how local leaders are attempting to deal with the opioid crisis in the region. Cindy Ehlers, Executive Vice President of Clinical Operations for Trillium Health Resources and a licensed professional counselor, is with us. Trillium plans to open an abstinence-based long-term treatment facility in Wilmington for men called the Healing Place in New Hanover County. Dr. William Johnstone is a faculty physician in the OBGYN residency program at NHRMC. He is also a founder of Tides, Inc., a local nonprofit funded by New Hanover County that treats pregnant women and new moms using medically assisted therapy. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. It's the last segment, so just a few minutes left for you to get your question or comment in. I want to read this email from Anonymous, who says, I take exception to your guest on one point. Mental illness is far more stigmatized than substance abuse here in Wilmington. And even though the two things go hand in hand, substance abuse can be prevented. However, this person writes, mental illness cannot. Cindy Ehlers, can you just take the idea of the stigma on both?
So I absolutely agree. There's a lot of stigma around both. In fact, it is the stigma or the shaming we talked about earlier, Rachel, that keeps people from seeking treatment for these types of issues. It is not wanting other people to know that you have this problem that keeps people from getting help. And when we really think about how mental health and addiction get go together, is people a lot of times don't get treatment for mental health. They choose to self-medicate, and then that turns into an addiction, and they have both issues.
And there are other ways that people become addicted to opioids, Dr. Johnstone. Can you take us through a common scenario that sort of cuts through the notion that substance abuse is preventable? Is it preventable?
That's a tough question. Physiologically, the body can develop a dependence on opioids after as soon as 5 days of starting.
So if I am in a car accident, my doctor prescribes opioids for my recovery to help me through the pain. If that treatment program goes on for as little, less than a week, it's possible that I could become addicted.
That's correct, yeah. And, you know, typically if you've been in an automobile accident, you've had surgery, which is a big part of my practice, we provide narcotics and opioids for pain relief. In stark opposition to that, I do some mission work to go to third world countries and do gynecological surgery. And it's astounding to me that the women that we operate on in Guatemala or in the Dominican Republic, they know they're coming to have an operation. Operations hurt. I'm going to have pain. We treat them with a little bit of narcotic while they're there. Maybe send them home with 6 oxycodones, but use acetaminophen and ibuprofen, and they go on their merry way. Us here in the United States, when we have an operation, we know we're going to have pain, but then we don't want any pain. We know we can be treated. And so it's...
Is that really on the patient, though? I mean, Cindy Ellers, you've said, you've had some pretty strong words for the medical community here. Forgive us for a moment, Dr. Johnstone. I'll let you come back and refute this if you'd like. But you've said that doctors keep prescribing opioids. And you've said that we have an opiate-naive population and opiate-naive doctors in this area. What do you mean by that?
So opiate-naive patients are the patients Dr. Johnstone is describing, those people who are able to be addicted with just 5 tablets of oxycodone and they're hooked. It's sort of a play on words for me. Opiate-naive doctors are the doctors that continuously prescribe those medicines. They're naive to addiction. They don't understand the impact these opiates are having on their patients, and they keep prescribing and keep prescribing. The person's already addicted at 5. They're already addicted. They don't screen for that. They don't
at 5 look. Pills.
A lot of doctors don't 5 days of pills. So doctors don't look at, is my patient developing an addiction? And then when the patient does, they discharge them because they don't know how to get them connected to treatment. They don't know how to treat the addiction, the prescription caused. And yes, I have strong words about that, because what we have learned at Trillium is that many of the people who are calling us all 24 hours a day, we're available for folks to access care. Many of the folks that call us are calling us saying, I started out with a car injury or a car accident or a work injury. I got prescribed these drugs and now I can't stop. I've lost my job, I've lost my wife, I've lost my kids, I'm living in my truck, and I can't get off this stuff. Now I'm buying it illegally because my doctor won't give it to me anymore. And we're trying to connect the dots for them with the treatment community that's out there.
And that has been happening here, actually, Dr. Johnstone. There has been a cut in by almost 20%, I guess, last year among physicians prescribing opioids for their patients. Is that right? They're now going to other modalities.
That's what I hear, and the data reflects that out of New Hanover Regional Medical Center. And so in addition to being made aware of the problem to the medical staff, the North Carolina legislature passed the STOP Act, which came into force on July 1 of 2017, and it essentially makes it against the law to prescribe extended use of opioids and narcotics without reassessing or seeing the patient in your office. It also adds other stopgap measures such as checking the CSRS, which is a data bank which will allow you to go in and see a patient's prescription filling activity prior to you prescribing them. medication, which is required not only by the physician prescribing the medication, but also by the pharmacist. So there are a couple of stopgap measures in there that have been introduced by the STOP Act. Unfortunately, you know, all physicians are not aware of the details of this new law. And I think it would behoove them to make themselves familiar with what the law actually is now.
There's still some education that needs to happen in the medical community about this. We have an email from Anonymous who says, I became addicted to crack cocaine at the age of 49 after no history of drug use. I landed in North Carolina with no support system and in a paranoid psychotic state when I sought help. It took rehab, AA, NA, and 16 months of continuous relapses after 30 or 60 days clean before the relapses ended. That time remains the worst in my life. 13 and a half years later, I'm clean and sober and no longer involved in recovery programs. I know recovery is possible for anyone willing to endure the pain and hopelessness that is a part of beginning and beginning again. Thanks for sharing that story with us. We had a call. Gary from Wilmington asks, how has the hurricane affected the statistics on dependencies on opioids? Is there any tracking of this yet? Cindy Ellers or Dr. Johnstone? That's early. I mean, we're still not even 6 months out yet from this hurricane.
So, right. You know, I can see access to programs, you know, transportation, interrupted services. But I'm not aware of any issues coming from the hurricane that I've been made aware of.
Yeah, so Trillium was active in the response in hurricane as part of our job in the public mental health system, and we did see a lot of folks right after the storm who had been displaced in shelters and that who really didn't know they had an addiction until they couldn't get prescription refilled. And we did a lot of triage. We got folks connected to services and supports through the treatment community and got them on a path for getting some of that resolved. Certainly for folks that maybe have been in long-term recovery, an event like Florence, certainly in the magnitude that it had here, could be a trigger for relapse. And I think all of our recovery communities have been keenly aware of that. Talked about, you know, the struggles folks have had getting back on their feet after the storm, and as well as our provider agencies that deliver treatment in the community.
Anne from Wilmington asks, are the people at these facilities required to pay for their services? That's a great question. So we know, Dr. Johnstone, that TIDES is funded by New Hanover County, but how does a patient deal with that from a cost point of view?
We accept, our prenatal care is funded by Medicaid. The IOP portion of our program is funded by Medicaid. However, all the other services are free of charge. They're funded by the TIDES, and so anyone is welcome, not dependent on their ability to pay, which is something that's a little different in the Wilmington area. So we feel like we're providing the service to the population that needs it the most, that has the fewest resources.
Cindy Ellers, what would the Healing Place in New Hanover County require from patients to pay?
There is no charge to patients. So as I mentioned earlier, Trillium manages the Medicaid funding for addiction treatment in this region of the state today, as well as state funds that are geared toward uninsured or underinsured individuals, as well as we receive county allocations from our counties. And New Hanover County has committed to purchasing beds, as has Brunswick County, out of the Healing Place for folks that live in their counties. We also receive an allocation from each county that is legislatively required, called it's the ABC bottle tax, and it's a 5 cents tax on every bottle of alcohol sold. We receive those allocations, and the money is legislatively required to be spent on substance use treatment. And so the 174 people that have gone to the Healing Transitions of Wake County since July, their care there, $45 a day, has been paid for through the ABC bottle tax and ABC money. It's funding we have. Trillium blends and braids together state, federal, and local dollars to make this happen for this community.
And I want to go back to this idea of abstinence and medically assisted therapies and kind of looking at the efficacy rate of both. Some of the resistance, Dr. Johnstone, to medically assisted therapy is the notion of moving someone from one opioid to another. How does that make sense? And how does that work? And do people then need to stay on those drugs for the duration?
The concept of medically assisted therapy is based on the pharmacology of buprenorphine. It's a partial mu agonist, and that doesn't mean much to your population, but the mu receptor is a receptor that's hit with opioids and heroin. And if it's a full agonist, meaning it goes into the keyhole, the key turns and the door opens all the way, and it starts that whole warm, fuzzy, good feeling initially when you start taking these medications. The partial agonist puts the key in the door, turns it just a little bit, not a lot, enough to take the edge off of withdrawal symptoms that was described in great detail early, which is pretty much it. It's like the flu on steroids.
Is the hope then that you get the patient through the withdrawal and then they are no longer dependent on even the buprenorphine?
Buprenorphine, yes. That's the goal, but it's not 28 days. It's not 6 months.
Could be 10 years.
It could be 10 years. The goal is to alleviate the symptoms, get the patient on their feet, get them back into society, get them back to where their self-confidence is high. And
so
their self-esteem
functional.
Is high. Right.
So, but it's possible that part of being functional is being on that drug in perpetuity.
Correct. But at some point, if the patient says, look, I've got this, I've got a great support system, my family supports me, I've got a job, I'm not going to lose my job, I've got a family, I'm not going to lose my family, with your direction, I'd like to start to wean off. And I'm not opposed to that at all. But if you look at the physiology of addiction, we've talked about it before, that it's a disease. And you don't quit treating diabetes after 28 days of treatment. It's a lifelong thing. And the reason why addiction is a lifelong thing, because physiologically, once your brain, your midbrain is exposed to these substances, it's rewired. And so even though you stop using it, you can't unrewire your brain. And so you've got to do something to take that edge of the new neuropathways, the new response to exogenous substances. You've just got to be treated.
And that's interesting because our first emailer who was writing about 12-step programs, NA and AA, talked about a cucumber becoming a pickle. And once it's a pickle, it doesn't go back ever to being a cucumber. Cindy Ehlers.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Dr. Johnstone. And the only thing I would add is that what is essential in any treatment program, whether it's an abstinence-based or medication-assisted therapies, is education of the patient about the disease. They have to understand everything that he said about this disease to overcome addiction.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Cindy Ehlers, Dr. William Johnstone, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.